Hello, this is the Cryptic Code. We're your hosts, Harmon.
Kenzie
And Amber.
And we like to talk about cryptids, generally anything spooky.
We cuss a lot.
Indeed. Welcome back to the Cryptic Code. Apologies for the long absence, but burnout is a hell of a drug. Since our last episode, Harmon got a job, and then 90 days later, lost that job. Not my fault. But my pain is your gain as it gives me more time to focus on my true passion. Talking about probably fake creatures with my best buddies.
Oh, what a positive
That's
outlook.
so nice.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I'd like to introduce our guest for this episode and personal friend of the show, Amber. Now, Amber, in the world of the paranormal, we like to think of it as a binary choice between those who are skeptics and those who are believers. You got your Harmons and you got your JPs.
Yep.
I definitely lean more on JP's side. I'm sorry, but I do like the tails and everything.
Oh,
Shut up.
disappointing. I cannot believe you.
Sorry, Mom.
I like to think of it more as a spectrum with total believer and total skeptic on opposite ends. You say you lean more towards the JP. Is there anything you believe in? Do you believe in any personal, any paranormal phenomenon like ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot?
Well, I definitely believe in aliens. I just don't think that they would care to come to Earth. You know what I mean? Like, we're not that interesting, in my
The
opinion.
government would disagree with you.
Yeah, well, the government's fucked, so. But I don't believe in
Thanks.
ghosts personally either. I mean, I guess I kind of believe in like energies hanging around because, you know, energy never dies. It's like always there. But ghosts,
Wow.
Kenzie, stop judging me.
Shit, I was gonna say something, but my brain is kind of destroyed. But yeah,
Same, buddy.
the government is corrupt. The CIA is sending a drone strike to my house right now.
Yeah, are you sure it's not a
What?
UAP? It could be a UAP. What is
Oh
a
God.
UAP?
Oh
That's
God, it's
what the
little
government is calling aliens, Amber. Have you not
because
been seeing the trials for that?
No, I haven't.
that's
This
gonna have to
might
be its own episode.
That is going to have to be its own episode, but Amber, you have to understand the government is in the process of basically saying that the possibility of aliens being real is like a thing. There are people claiming that we have non-human entities in our presence or whatever. Big
Yeah,
deal.
UAPs is a new word for UFOs because UFOs is considered tainted. UAPs stand for Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. It recently changed.
Okay.
A means something else. I think it's officially Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena because now that shit's landing.
See,
Oh,
when I
okay.
hear anomalous, all I think of are SCPs.
I think about the Muppets
What
because
the fuck?
they have a song that goes like, "Phenomena, do do," and I think
Ah, yes.
anomaly, do do.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. I really didn't know where you were going with that.
Listen, my madness typically has a method to it. Typically.
Was about to say, typically.
Not always.
But it's a good thing that you mentioned aliens because that is exactly what we're going to be covering today. And what we're covering is a landmark for UFO mythology. Are you all ready to begin?
Heck
Yes, sir.
yeah.
The date was September 19th, 1961. Husband and wife Barney and Betty Hill had just wrapped up a wonderful vacation to Niagara Falls and were on their way home to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. For some context, the pair had gotten married just a year before, and this trip was their honeymoon. Now, Betty was a social worker, while Barney was a postal service employee, with both being active political members of the NAACP. You see, they're an interracial couple, which back then wasn't widely accepted. So that caused them to be politically motivated. Betty was white and Barney was African American. As their Chevrolet Bel Air, Jesus Christ, as their Chevrolet Bel Air, gee, as their Chevrolet. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Oh my god, are you okay?
No. As their Chevrolet Bel Air carried them along Route 3, they were likely reveling in the bliss that follows a newlywed honeymoon. But little did they know that the events of that night would change their lives forever. Betty was the first to see it, a bright light in the sky that she took to simply be a shooting star. She would later say, quote, "When I first looked at it, it didn't seem anything particularly unusual, except they were fortunate enough to see a satellite. It had no doubt gone off its course, and it seemed to be going along the curvature of the Earth. It looked like a star in motion," end quote. She soon began to rethink that as the light seemed to follow them into the Francona Notch State Park. Her suspicions grew as it seemed to be almost stalking them, dipping behind mountain peaks and below the tree line, as if trying to avoid their sight. Around this time, their dash hound, Delcy, became agitated. So agitated, in fact, that they pulled over so she could relieve herself. It was at that point that Barney took notice of a light still following them and speculated that it might just be an airplane. However, being a veteran of World War II, he knew that no aircraft could move the way it did. Betty, however, had a pretty good idea of what it was. An unidentified flying object. This is not her first encounter with UFOs, as her family had seen one in Kingston, New Hampshire years earlier. Barney, however, did not agree. He was a bit more skeptical and assured himself it just had to be something logical up there. When the dog was done, they continued on their way, but the light never gave up its pursuit. As they came to a curve near the Indian Head Rock Formation, the light had given up any attempt at hiding and hovered roughly 100 feet directly above their vehicle. It made no noise, even as close as it was. And the reason became apparent as to why. Getting a closer look at the thing, they saw it wasn't an airplane or a shooting star, but in fact a silver metallic disc. Barney wanted to know more. Stopping the car, he got out and used a pair of binoculars to try and get a closer look. And what he saw blew his mind. There was a large craft that, as Barney would later describe it, was 60 to 80 feet in diameter, with V-shaped wings tipped with red lights, as well as windows lining the side. Through these windows, he could see almost a dozen humanoid figures moving around. Suddenly, it began to descend. Terrified, he jumped back in his car and tried to get the hell out of there as quickly as he could. But the UFO had other ideas. As they sped, it sped after them. And as it came overhead, it emitted a buzzing sound that appeared to bounce off the car's trunk. With it, the hills began to feel strange tingling throughout their bodies. Next thing they knew, they woke up in their car, missing 2 to 3 hours of time, and found themselves a full 35 miles south of where they had seen the saucer. Our story today is one of the most famous close encounters of UFO history, specifically the fourth kind. It will set the template for a phenomenon that we will doubtlessly cover in the future and serves as a great introduction to a subject that has been long overdue for this podcast. This is the alien abduction of Betty and Barney Hill. Have either of you heard of this before?
Nope.
Really?
I don't think I've heard of this either.
Wow, that surprises me. Because
I was going to say, it surprises me too that I'm not familiar with this, considering you're saying that it's such like this kind of like monumental case. But yeah, I don't recognize their names at all.
It's essentially going to set the template for alien abductions, and it's kind of considered ground zero for this particular type of extraterrestrial activity. The only one I can think of is as famous as the Travis Walton case, which I imagine we'll also cover at some point. Have any of you heard of Travis Walton?
I have not either. I feel so lame right now.
I know, I do too. I like aliens and stuff, and yeah, I have no freaking clue.
Well, you might know it from a movie that was heavily inspired by it called Fire in the Sky.
I've heard of that. That's going to be a no. from me. I don't know what that is either. Okay. I'm uncultured.
I grew up with that movie, which probably explains a lot about who I am as a person.
Cool. And then I have to watch it and see. I've heard of it. I haven't watched it, but...
It starts really boring, then gets really scary.
Oh.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know why, but I thought the movie you were going to reference was going to be Paul. That one with...
Why would that be inspired by real life events?
I don't know. They make friends with an alien. That's cool.
Dude, with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, I would believe that was a true story. Continuing our tale, the weirdness didn't end when they returned home. When they got home, they found that Betty's dress had been torn, with a weird pink substance staining it. Shiny spots dotted their car, and oddly enough, when they put a compass near it, the needle would spin erratically, as if it had some kind of strange magnetic effect. On top of that, both their watches had stopped at the time of their disappearance, which is how they realized they had several hours of time unaccounted for. 2 to 3, depending on which account you go by. Now, are either of you familiar with the concept of missing time? We briefly discussed it in one of our Mothman episodes. I believe it was part 4.
I don't remember that, no. But I feel like I've heard a lot about lost time. That seems to be a very common occurrence in alien stories.
Yeah, it's one of the big phenomena. For those who aren't aware, the long and short of it is that those who claim to have been abducted by aliens often experience long stretches of time completely unaccounted for, with no memory of what occurred during said time.
Right. Okay.
Now, they knew they couldn't keep this to themselves. Thus, the next day, Betty called in to report the incident to the 100th Bomber Wing at Peace Air Force Base located in Newington, New Hampshire. Of everything they saw, the only details they excluded was the humanoids that Barney saw, as he actually didn't mention them to her. Later that day, the report was followed up on by Major Paul W. Henderson. Betty wrote in her diary about the on-phone interview, saying, quote, "Major Henderson asked to speak with Barney. He was hesitant about talking on the phone. But once he was on the phone, he was giving more information than I had. Later, Barney said he had done this for Major Henderson. Did not express any surprise or disbelief," end quote. And he had good reason not to, as Major Henderson was working with Project Blue Book, the Air Force official investigation into UFOs. Now, Project Blue Book has gained a lot more notoriety in recent years, with the Pentagon admitting to conducting UFO research. Henderson's report to the project read as such, quote, "On the night of 19 to 20 September, between 2:01 and 2:00 hours, Mr. and Mrs. Hill were traveling south on Route 3 near Lincoln, New Hampshire, when they observed through the windshield of their car a strange object in the sky. They noticed it because of its shape and the intensity of its lighting as compared to the stars in the sky. The weather and the sky were clear at the time," end quote. Despite Henderson's seeming acceptance of the Hill story, Project Blue Book was a bit more skeptical. There are 2 official explanations that they offered. The first was that they had seen an advertising searchlight in the middle of rural New Hampshire in a state park. The second was that they had seen the planet Jupiter at peak brilliance in the sky. Both explanations are, in my opinion, rather laughable. The Jupiter explanation has kind of become a meme in the UFO community. How does that sound to you all, though?
Well, I will say, I just like how you're saying, I like what you said, that the Jupiter theory has become a meme in the UFO community. That's just cute. That's just like a cute little thing. I like that.
I like that too.
It's just adorable.
Thank you. It's kind of a joke along with swamp gas and weather balloons.
I believe it.
But one has to remember the state of Project Blue Book at this time. If you listen
to I was going to say, hold on really, really fast. Project Blue Book. I need a refresher course. Can somebody give me like bullet points?
It is the official Air Force investigation into UFOs.
And that was like in the 60s?
Yep, 50s, okay. 60s. Its predecessor was Project Grudge and Project Sign, I believe.
Okay.
And I believe it continued into the 70s.
Yes. Didn't they stop it because they were like, UFOs aren't real? And then all these years later, they're like, by the way, we actually never stopped investigating it. We just lied.
Well, what changed was the Washington UFO invasion of 1952, which we did an episode on, where a bunch of UFOs appeared over Washington. And rather than publicly admit, hey guys, there's shit that we can't stop and don't understand flying right over the Capitol, the CIA actually pressured Project Blue Book into taking more of a stance of explaining and debunking cases rather than genuinely investigating. The change happened with the Robertson panel, which was a bunch of physicists led by one Dr. Robertson, where they took the five most credible cases from Project Blue Book's long career, easily dismissed all of them without really looking at the evidence, and then said, okay guys, our job from now on is to debunk. Don't investigate, just debunk. Because the CIA was worried that it could be like a Soviet plot to spread hysterics across the United States.
Oh, wow.
Because the Soviet Union, the Cold War was still around at this time. Betty, on the other hand, would take the investigation into her own hands. The day after their abduction, she would check out a book from a local library by Donald Kehoe, who was also mentioned in our Washington UFO invasion episode. Kehoe was a Marine Corps aviator and wrote the seminal work of Saucerian study titled The Flying Saucers Are Real. Straight to the point. Betty went as far as to send Kehoe a letter, which he in turn sent to one Walter N. Webb. Webb, it so happens, was a Boston astronomer, a lecturer at the Hayden Planetarium, and most importantly, scientific advisor to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, a civilian group that studied reports of UFOs. They come up frequently in our UFO episodes, on the way back to our Phoenix Lights deep dive, I believe.
Yeah, I remember them from Phoenix Lights, especially.
And yes, I will keep referencing old episodes because that's what we call shilling.
They're relevant.
Now, Webb would contact the Hills by phone and conduct a whopping 6-hour interview over the phone on October 21st, 1961. The spooky month.
Spooky month. The best month.
I'm so excited. It's coming. To try and get a clear picture of the event, he interviewed both of them separately and found that their descriptions lined up fairly well. He wrote in his report to NICAP, quote, I tried to make a slip up somewhere and I couldn't. I simply couldn't. Theirs was an ironclad story, as well as they were telling the truth. And the incident occurred exactly as reported, except for minor uncertainties and technicalities that must be tolerated in any such observation. Where human judgment is involved, end quote.
Did they detail like what those were?
Things like time, distance, where it would be down to a few minutes, more general.
Okay, gotcha.
Give me a second. One of the biggest findings over the course of the interview was that Barney was not taking the whole ordeal well at all. He was significantly more anxious than Betty and even confessed to feeling as though he had a mental block that erased memories his brain simply did not want to process. NICAP would hold a second interview with the couple on November 25th, this time in person by C.D. Jackson and Robert E. Homan. Of their entire experience, the Hills were only able to recall the image of a blazing ball of light resting on the ground, which they thought was the setting moon, on the horizon, so it looks like it's on the ground.
Okay, I was going to say, the moon does not set itself on the ground.
It's just Majora Mask shit. They're finishing their honeymoon at like Niagara Falls, and they just look up and there's big text saying, the final dawn.
Oh my God.
However, as the investigators point out, the moon had already set by the time of their encounter. Now, I want to take a moment and get a bit of a vibe check. How y'all feeling about this thus far?
It's spooky. It's interesting. I'm not going to say that they're crazy.
I find it interesting that Barney is the one that's like having like the weird feelings like after the fact. Like he's the most stressed out, even though he was like a veteran. Maybe that's why, because he was in the military.
PTSD stuff.
Well, I'm thinking more so like here he sees things a very specific way, like, and then something like you can't explain pops up, something he saw really up close with binoculars, and like it kind of just like shatters your foundation. Maybe that's why he's having
like his reality feels weird.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of like when some people hear how we're in a simulation,
they flip out. Kind of thing. It's basically like an existential crisis is what's happening. It sounds like for this guy.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah,
it's weird that only one of them is feeling this way. But like you said, maybe like the military stuff. Who knows?
Well, and I also question, because Harmon, I was like taking notes while you talked about their story, and you had said that she had her dress was torn with like some kind of mysterious pink substance or something like that.
Yes.
Like, were they out? They were outside their car, obviously, because they stopped, look out binoculars, blah, 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 blah. So like, what exactly, is there any idea what exactly got on her? What touched her?
We don't know.
Because they have those 3 hours of missing time, so it could have happened then.
What their niece found out, because she wrote a book, was that the substance was tested and was found to be an organic material that couldn't be identified.
Whoa. Now that's cool.
But I like the little track that you all are on, because we're going to get into the really crazy shit, and this is going to become a lot more of a cerebral psychological case.
Oh, so it's not the crazy shit yet?
Oh no.
Well, okay, so I'm a big fan of Distractible, and I listen to it all the time, and when they record, they all have their cameras up, even though they don't share video, even though they do now, but before they didn't. They always had their videos up anyways, because apparently it was easier not to accidentally interrupt each other, because you could see everybody's faces and you kind of could tell who was talking and when they were finished their thought.
Video tends to make my Zoom crash, so I don't know if I want to fly that close to the sun. Plus, my camera's really shitty, so whenever I turn it on, it looks like the last known image shit that they put on like Unsolved Mysteries when they pull someone's face off of, like, CCTV.
Fuck, yeah.
That's the best shit.
I look like I'm 7 minutes from like a fucking Ring video.
Okay.
I will say that during like our staff meetings at my like weekday job, we do our Zooms and we all show our faces, but we still fucking interrupt each other.
Oh, do you?
We do.
I just feel like, well, how many people are in your Zoom calls?
A little under 10. I'd say maybe 8 at this point.
Look at the chaos of fucking
That's
three of us.
Different. I know, you have like a very grainy background. Oh, wow, Amber's background. Amber looks so good. Look at her pretty face. Oh my God, Amber, look, our matching tattoos. Yeah.
I don't have any tattoos yet. Yeah.
You need to get on it, bro.
Probably never. No, fuck off.
I got them in weird places because I have a patchwork.
That sounds
and I have no money.
Suggestive. I want you to know that, Kenzie. I got mine in weird places in the inside of my asshole.
Get your money out of the gutter.
I have one in my eyeball.
Ooh, that would be
That's
painful.
A thing.
You can
people
tattoo
get their
your
eyelids tattooed. Oh, like your eyeball, do you mean?
You can
or do
get
you mean
the
your
whites of your eyes tattooed.
Ew.
Yeah.
That sounds horrible.
It looks kind of cool.
Y'all want to talk about aliens?
Let's go.
Yes, let's go.
Okay, so if I look weird, it's because I'm reading the script, and I don't know, maybe we'll put the video on YouTube. Probably not.
We should totally do video one day. I think it'd be so fun.
I told you about this, Harmon. I was like, you guys should do video and just do you guys talking. I was like, that'd be cute.
It would be
Who
so
wants
fun.
To look at my face? Let's
Everybody,
be honest.
You have
Who wants
the
to see some
mustache?
Mid-20s balding ass motherfucker sit around being like, and then
Maybe.
You sound like mid-20s is a bad thing.
That's Wade. You're Wade. You're
Number
the Wade
15.
Of our trio. Amber.
Also, people like to put a name to the face. Like,
not
I
this
do
face,
like
honey,
these.
Not this face.
Oh, shut
yes,
up.
We can totally do it. Look, this the recording process is going so well right now. There is no lag whatsoever. Like, this is a magical experience, and we're having video. Like, we could totally do this.
Maybe. Oh, give me a reason to get a set and set design.
Hey, that'd be fun. I'd help you make stuff.
The memory started with him looking at the craft through his binoculars. He saw 8 to 10 figures in the window and could see that they appeared to be pulling levers up and down. He said they were humanoid, but, quote, somehow not human, end quote. In particular, he remembered that one of them seemed to resemble a red-headed Irishman. During the session, he said, quote, I think of a red-headed Irishman. I don't know why. Well, I think I know why. Because Irish are usually hostile to word that was okay in the 60s, but isn't okay to say now. End quote.
Amber just, hold on, her connection. There we go.
You okay, Amber? Did the aliens get you?
Oh, no. Not yet, anyway.
Okay, good. Hold on to your
hair. Cody just walked.
Oh, they got her again.
Hold on to my hair. Oh, God.
Amber, we're losing you. Goodbye. There's an Amber and a Harmon.
Come back to your house.
Come back to your house, Amber. We're losing you.
Tony wants to pee everywhere away from the house. I got him wrangled.
The Irish alien looked friendly and even smiled at Barney.
The Irish alien. That's such a funny sentence.
What put them on into ya, human?
I know, that's what I'm picturing. Like, it's a, like he's got like E.T. finger and he's got like just an Irish accent. Like, what the fuck?
Take me to your lucky times in Guinness.
Oh my god, these are horrible. Horrible representations of Irish people.
We're gonna take a death ray to London. Fuck the English. A hinda hinga again. As he does a little jig towards Barney. I'm part Irish, I can say this shit.
You're like 10. He's 10% Irish secretly.
Not secretly, home dog. Now, this apparent friendliness contrasted with their black uniforms, which made Barney think of the Nazis he saw in World War II.
Oh, no. Triggered.
And, yeah, basically, like all joking aside, basically.
Yeah.
An overwhelming sense of terror swept over him, so much so that he felt like he had to go get his firearm from the car and start taking pot shots at the saucer.
Holy shit.
However, he found it difficult to move. Maybe it was just fear, but on the more paranormal side, the seeming leader of the aliens was telepathically telling him to keep still. Barney described the leader as having slanted eyes and an evil-looking appearance that frightened him so badly, he actually began to pray for God to let him escape. And through sheer faith or force of will, he managed to. He managed to push through his paralysis and get to the car. At this point in the session, Barney grew so upset that he was hysterical. I think one description said he had tears coming down his face. He was basically screaming, pleading for Dr. Simon to wake him up. However, Simon urged him forward, believing that this was the only way to confront and overcome his trauma. As the regression continued, Barney said that though he was just attempting to flee, he felt strangely compelled to pull the car over and drive into the woods. And he did so. He was stopped in the road by 6 men, with 3 approaching the car and taking him out. Terrified, Barney was told to close his eyes and did so, though he could feel when they brought him up an incline. Well, they were by my side. I had a funny feeling because I knew they were holding me, but I couldn't feel them. I felt floating, suspended, end quote. When he finally opened his eyes, he found himself in what looked like a hospital operating room. Stranger still, he had a cup fashioned around his area. Probably should have given trigger warning for the possibly suggestive content.
Did you say a cut?
A cup.
Oh, weird.
Fashioned around his crotch, basically. Which Barney believed was meant to get a sample. Let us leave it at that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Other samples taken included a narrow tube directed into his anus, a skin sample, and hands running up and down his spine as if just getting a feel for the vertebrae.
Oh my God.
It kind of gives the impression of an experimental medical examination like we often do of animals. You know how, like, when we catch a shark and pull it out of the water, the first thing we do is start touching it, we put shit in it, and then we throw it back into the water?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we put, like, trackers and stuff so we can learn, like, migration periods and...
I have seen the trackers, which makes me sad because they get stabbed.
But how are y'all feeling about this so far before we get deeper into this?
Well, his sound, he sounds like he just was traumatized. I mean, he just sounded like all of it was just immensely horrifying for him to deal with.
Super intense, especially with his war background and everything. That doesn't help.
Yeah. 100%.
So, sorry, also, you're going to hear a little bit of bugs and birds behind me because I'm taking the dogs out. So, you said that they started in January of 64?
Their first session was December and then continued from January to June.
And then March of that year is when they went to the church, right? To talk about it? Or
And then was it March October? Of 1963.
Okay, the year before. Got it. I was like, timeline seemed weird. Okay, that's just me being rude and not paying attention.
You're fine.
Then what year did they actually see the aliens?
1961.
So they're 1961, they saw the aliens. 1963, they went to the church and talked to them. And 1964, they're seeing
having sessions. Yes. At the tail end of 1963 into 1964.
Why did they wait so long before they went and spoke with people?
Because they're both members of the NAACP, and Barney was actually a member of the local board, the United States Commission of Civil Rights. They're politically active, and they're afraid if they went public with it, it would destroy their reputations and hurt their causes.
So they waited. They waited until, like, the nightmares, their experiences, everything was getting too much for them to function with on a regular basis.
Right. The nightmares. They couldn't handle it anymore, and they were like, okay, we got to do something.
From what I understand, it was really Barney who wanted to keep it in, and Betty wanted to know more, and maybe she finally just convinced him.
Well, that sounds about right, because he was like, yeah, I don't want to talk about it, and I don't want to think about it, and don't tell me about your dreams.
Don't tell me about your dreams.
Shut up. Yeah, basically.
If Brandon ever said that to me, I'd be very sad, because I have some crazy dreams, but he always humors me and listens to them.
I feel like it'd be different if it was aliens, and you're going to see that Barney went through some shit.
Oh, God.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Speaking of which, it soon became clear that Barney was not handling it nearly as well as Betty was, and had a great deal of anxiety over the event. For that reason, among others, I think it would be best for us to start with his version of what happened and what he said during his regression session. Does that sound okay if you all?
Yeah,
go for it.
The memory started with him looking at the craft through his binoculars. He saw 8 to 10 figures in the window and could see that they appeared to be pulling levers up and down. He said they were humanoid, but, quote, somehow not human, end quote. In particular, he remembered that one of them seemed to resemble a red-headed Irishman. During the session, he said, quote, I think of a red-headed Irishman. I don't know why. Well, I think I know why. Because Irish are usually hostile to word that was okay in the 60s, but isn't okay to say now. End quote.
Amber hold on, her connection. There we go.
You okay, Amber? Do the aliens get you?
Oh, no. Not yet, anyway.
Okay, good. Hold on to your hair. Cody just walked. Oh, they got her again.
Hold on to my hair. Oh, God.
Amber, we're losing you. Goodbye. There's an Amber and a Harmon.
Come back to your house.
Go back to your house, Amber. We're losing you.
Tony wants to pee everywhere away from the house. I got him wrangled.
The Irish alien looked friendly and even smiled at Barney.
The Irish alien. That's such a funny sentence.
What put them on into ya, human?
I know, that's what I'm picturing. Like, it's a, like he's got like E.T. finger and he's got like just an Irish accent. Like, what the fuck?
Take me to your Lucky Charms and Guinness.
Oh my god, these are horrible, horrible representations of Irish people.
We're gonna take a death ray to London. Fuck the English. A hinda hinga again, as he does a little jig towards Barney. I'm part Irish, oh, I can say this shit.
You're like, yeah. He's 10% Irish secretly.
Not secretly, home dog. Now, this apparent friendliness contrasted with their black uniforms, which made Barney think of the Nazis he saw in World War II.
Oh no, triggered.
Yeah, basically, like all joking aside, basically. Yeah. An overwhelming sense of terror swept over him, so much so that he felt like he had to go get his firearm from the car and start taking pot shots at the saucer.
Holy shit.
However, he found it difficult to move. Maybe it was just fear, but on the more paranormal side, the seeming leader of the aliens was telepathically telling him to keep still. Barney described the leader as having slanted eyes and an evil-looking appearance that frightened him so badly, he actually began to pray for God to let him escape. And through sheer faith or force of will, he managed to. He managed to push through his paralysis and get to the car. At this point in the session, Barney grew so upset that he was hysterical. I think one description said he had tears coming down his face. He was basically screaming, pleading for Dr. Simon to wake him up. However, Simon urged him forward, believing that this was the only way to confront and overcome his trauma. As the regression continued, Barney said that though he was just attempting to flee, he felt strangely compelled to pull the car over and drive into the woods. And he did so. He was stopped in the road by six men, with three approaching the car and taking him out. Terrified, Barney was told to close his eyes and did so, though he could feel when they brought him up an incline. Quote, "They were by my side. I had a funny feeling because I knew they were holding me, but I couldn't feel them. I felt floating, suspended," end quote. When he finally opened his eyes, he found himself in what looked like a hospital operating room. Stranger still, he had a cup fashioned around his area. Probably should have given trigger warning for the possibly suggestive content.
Did you say a cut?
A cup.
Oh, weird.
Fashioned around his crotch, basically. Which Barney believed was meant to get a sample. Let's leave it at that.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Other samples taken included a narrow tube directed into his anus, a skin sample, and hands running up and down his spine as if just getting a feel for the vertebrae.
Oh my god.
It kind of gives the impression of an experimental medical examination like we often do of animals. You know how like when we catch a shark and pull it out of the water, the first thing we do is start touching it, we put shit in it, and then we throw it back into the water?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we put like trackers and stuff so we can learn like migration periods and
take I have seen the trackers, which makes me sad because they get stabbed.
But how are y'all feeling about this so far before we get deeper into this?
Well, he sounds like he just was traumatized. I mean, he just sounded like all of it was just immensely horrifying for him to deal with.
Super intense, especially with his war background and everything. That doesn't help.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, Betty's regression was going a bit differently and might explain why she wasn't as badly affected by the experience as her husband. Like Barney, she was taken out of the car by another three aliens, so there are six in total, moving in two groups. She recalled that They told her not to be afraid and that they meant her no harm. As Barney is carried off to one room, Betty protested being separated from her husband. Yet, the taller, supposed leader of the group told her that the examinations were going to take way longer if they were together. So it would be better for them to be separated so they can get it done quickly. And they led her into a room of her own. She was quoted saying, quote, "Another man comes in. I think he's a doctor. They push the sleeve of my dress and they look at my arm. And then they turn my arm over and they look at the underside. And they rub. They have a machine. It's something like a microscope, only a microscope with big lens," end quote. They also use what appeared to be a letter opener to scrape off, very lightly, a skin sample, placing it into a piece of plastic. A lock of hair was removed from her head. They took fingernail trimmings and performed a visual inspection of her eyes, ears, mouth, teeth, throat, and hands. During this, the examiner alien was described by Betty as calm and pleasant. He also explained in broken English that the point of the test was to determine the exact differences between them and humans. The last test mentioned in the book was a pregnancy test in the form of a large needle piercing into her navel. It was extremely painful at first, but the leader saw her discomfort and waved his hand over her face, and suddenly the pain disappeared. When the tests were concluded, she was allowed to speak with the leader. Betty expressed disappointment to the leader that she wanted some sort of souvenir, saying, quote, "I do wish I could have some proof of this, because it is the most unbelievable thing to ever happen," end quote. Which, when she says souvenir, I know she means like alien metal or some shit, but I just imagine them putting her back in the car and she wakes up with a shirt that says, "I was abducted by aliens and all I got was this stupid t-shirt."
Oh my God.
Like the aliens are going to take her out in a big arena with a crowd full of abductees and they're like, "Who wants a t-shirt?" And they fire a cannon into the crowd. Everyone's amazing. Jumping up trying to catch it.
I need someone to animate that.
Get on it. Our whole 30 listeners. We're a tight group.
They're loyal. We got some loyal listeners.
Hopefully.
I'm one of them.
Aww.
I'm my mom.
Yes!
My show is popular. My mommy told me so.
Exactly.
Now, the leader offered her one of the books they had, but said book was later taken back by another alien as she was taken off. While the conversation was going on, Betty saw Barney being led back to the car, which actually lined up with both their accounts, as Barney said he was returned before she was. Her final request was to ask where they came from. The leader answered by showing her a three-dimensional star map, which she described as kind of like a hologram. Dr. Simon asked Betty to sketch out this map, but she was hesitant as it would be difficult to convey a three-dimensional object in a two-dimensional drawing. Eventually, she acquiesced and did so, but we'll get to that later. And upon being returned to the car, Betty turned to her husband and asked, quote, "Well, do you believe in flying saucers now?" end quote.
Oh my God.
Which is some petty shit, and I love
That's it. That's hilarious. I love that too.
Especially because like her experience was just like so nice. Like the guy was like the alien was nice to her and like, you know, helped her with her pain, made it talk to her and everything. Whereas her husband's experience is he's like, "I was probed. They took a sample from my nether regions. They wouldn't stop touching me." Like there was like this completely different. That was
vibes.
Completely different. Oh my God.
She's just gaining in like, "What a nice man." And Barney's like, "I would like to go home now, please."
Barney's just screaming in the other room.
Literally. My God. Poor man. No, again, no wonder he was so traumatized after all this. Jesus.
I get it. I get it, home dog. No, the Irishman wasn't like, "Oh, don't tell what I know, laddie. We mean you no harm."
Oh my God.
And the worst part is, as I say that, I just imagine a purple dinosaur. I love you. So, fuck, where was I? Sorry, I'm getting a picture I'm going to show you all later. Because it is the star map that Betty drew.
Like the actual one that she drew?
Yeah. And I'm going to drop it in our text group chat. Let me know when you all see
it. He's going to have so many texts.
I know. JP's going to receive this map. He's going to be like, what the fuck is this?
It was bears, guys. It was bears.
Yeah, that's going to be his response to all of it, guaranteed.
Oh.
The fuck? You already got it? I still haven't received it.
A redrawn version of the Betty Hill star map. The alien's home star or planet is one of the two spheres. Solid lines are trade routes. Dotted lines are exploration routes. Image credit. Armag Planetarium? Is that how you say that?
I just no now idea. Got the photo.
Basically, the different dots are different stars and presumably solar systems, with the two circles being their home stars. Now, apparently, they're an intergalactic civilization. If they're handling commerce with different solar systems, and the dotted lines are where they're going for exploration. Despite all of this, the Hills would keep their stories to themselves. Like I mentioned, being politically active, they fear that the ridicule and humiliation destroy their careers. However, soon they didn't have a choice. As somehow their story was leaked to the Boston Evening Traveler newspaper. The reporter, I don't have his exact name, managed to get a recording of their confidential regression sessions, as well as like a transcript of their encounter. Somehow it was leaked to him. So with no other choice, the couple brought their story to the public and subsequently entered UFO history. Sorry, were you about to say something, Amber?
No.
Oh, sorry. Let me know if I'm cutting
no,
you
you're
off
fine.
By accident.
I mean, honestly, I think I've cut you off this entire thing. Just me.
It's okay. Soon, their story was published in the 1966 book, The Interrupted Journey by John G. Fuller, with sections printed in the premier paranormal magazine, Fate. This book, by the way, was later adapted into a television movie called The UFO Incident, starring James Earl Jones as Barney Hill and Estelle Parsons as Betty. And I just kind of like the idea that a guy who lived for the first popularized alien abduction was being played by the guy who voiced Darth Vader.
That's so crazy.
Feels like just one of those fun little cosmic coincidences, you know?
Yeah.
Now, the case got even more attention thanks to the work of Marjorie Fish. Marjorie Fish was a UFO researcher, elementary school teacher, and amateur astronomer from Oak Harbor, Ohio. She read The Interrupted Journey and decided to try and gauge where the aliens may have come from based off of Betty's star map. Now, you've all seen it, and one of the things I want to note, now you all seen the picture. According to the alien leader, the circle is the alien's home star, while the dots represent 12 stars. Solid lines represent trade routes, while dotted lines were exploratory missions. Marjorie, fascinated by a sketch of the map shown in the book, attempted to recreate using a series of wires, beads, and a 1969 Gliese catalog of nearby stars, which told like the distance between us and different stars throughout the galaxy, to try and find a match for the map. She spent several years adjusting her model and looking at it from multiple angles, literally, until eventually she found what appeared to be a match. According to her research, the alien's place of origin would be Zeta 2 Reticuli. Part of what backs this up is that you'll notice that the spheres represent the home stars of the aliens, but there's two. Turns out, the Zeta Reticulum system is a dual star system, meaning it has two. This seemed to give the Hills a lot more credit, as this finding was based off of information that we simply didn't have in 1961. Thoughts thus far?
I do really like it when something is shared and then a couple years later they like make a name for it and they're like, holy shit, that means the story from a couple years ago totally can't be fake, because how would they know this was a thing if the rest of the world didn't know it was a thing? I just love it when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes out to light and everything.
Point one for aliens.
Marjorie's findings would later be published in 1964 December of Astronomy Magazine. Marjorie's findings would be published in the 1964 December issue of Astronomy Magazine, with the magazine itself taking no particular stance. Instead, they invite readers to send their thoughts in, which would fill the magazine's opinion pages for over a year of people just arguing about this back and forth. Now, among the map's defenders was David Saunders, statistician and a member of the Condon Committee. The Condon Committee, for the unaware, was formerly named the University of Colorado UFO Project, a study funded by the U.S. Air Force and conducted at the titular university. Opponents, however, include Stephen Sauter, scientist in residence for New York University's Environmental Studies Program, as well as the Museum of Natural History's research associate for the Department of Astrophysics. Yet, most vocal among their detractors was none other than the science guy before Bill Nye, the one and only Carl motherfucking Sagan.
Oh my God.
I take it you all are familiar.
Yes. Yep.
Now, Carl Sagan doesn't really need an introduction, but I'm still going to provide some of his credentials because, one, I think it's interesting. Two, kind of proves a point of who we're talking about. He wrote over 600 published scientific papers, authored books like The Dragons of Eden, Broca's Brain, and The Pale Blue Dot, and started his college education at the University of Chicago at the whopping age of 16. He also wasn't a stranger to the hunt. Yeah. He also wasn't a stranger to the hunt for extraterrestrial life, as he designed the two Pioneer plaques placed upon Pioneer 10 and 11 space probes in 1972 and 1973, respectively. He also selected the contents for the Voyager Golden Records, a pair of golden records placed upon Voyager 1 and 2. Said contents included 116 images, nature sounds, spoken greetings in 55 languages, both modern and ancient, sounds of human laughter, footsteps, music, and adorably, a greeting from his six-year-old son, Nick, among other things.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, the capstone was a simple statement from President Jimmy Carter saying, quote, "This is a present from a small, distant world, a token of our sounds, our science, our images, our music, our thoughts, and our feelings. We are attempting to survive our time so we may live into yours," end quote. Now, I mentioned the Pioneer plaques and golden records because both were designed to effectively communicate a general idea of what humanity was like to an advanced alien species that will not speak our language. Sagan was considered one of the foremost experts on the concept of communication with extraterrestrials. So I feel like that gives his opinion extra weight. All this is to say, Carl Sagan's pretty fucking smart. Now, even if you don't know him from all that, you likely have heard of his TV show, Cosmos, A Personal Voyage, which had revival starring Neil deGrasse Tyson, named Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, and Cosmos, Possible World. Sagan's original run is among one of the biggest programs in the history of American television, being the most widely watched PBS series until it was usurped by Ken Burns' The Civil War documentary series in 1990. Its accompanying book, simply titled Cosmos, was on the bestseller list for 70 weeks straight.
Whoa. I had to read that in college in my honors course.
Jeez, how was it?
It was fine. Or wait, is it Cosmos? Is that the one I'm thinking of? What's the one that they made a movie about for him?
Contact?
Contact. That's the one I read. Not Cosmos. I knew it started with a C. Yeah, that's the one I read.
Yeah, that's his science fiction book, right? With like aliens?
Yes. Yep.
Hmm. Don't be afraid to dab on Carl Sagan. He's not going to listen to us.
To dab on Carl Sagan?
It would be insane if he did. What if we got like a Twitter mention? Like he retweets this episode and he's like, "I was listening."
That'd be pretty cool. That could
also freak me out at the same time.
Listener 29 right here.
I feel like it would be like the same kind of feeling as how people talk about the FBI agent and their like phones or like and their computer screen, how they just like judge you, watch what you're doing. That I feel like that would be the same kind of vibe.
Just eating chips, being like, dumb bitch.
And it was in 1975, on the 12th episode of Cosmos, titled Encyclopedia Galactica, as Sagan tackled the Hills abduction. On top of having a reenactment of the abduction, Sagan also questioned the validity of the star map by saying that essentially it's just a collection of random dots and lines. And with so many stars, with literally infinite angles to be viewed from, something was bound to eventually fit the pattern. Now, the
aforementioned... So is he skeptical?
Yeah.
Of her? Okay. Is he skeptical in general of, like, aliens and stuff? Or is it just of, like, her map and everything?
He's kind of like what you said, in that he believes aliens exist. Just statistically, they would have to. He doesn't think they've been to Earth.
Okay, gotcha.
The aforementioned reenactment actually caused a bit of legal trouble for Sagan and PBS. According to letters found by Skeptical Inquirer, it seems the anger was largely from Fuller, author of The Interrupted Journey. Apparently, if what I'm reading is correct, Fuller was upset not only by Sagan taking a skeptical, supposedly closed-minded view of the case, but also that the event of Fuller's books were recreated without permission. However, there's two issues with this, legally speaking. The first is that the rights of the story were no longer owned by Fuller, but by James Earl Jones due to the aforementioned television movie deal. Secondly, The Hills Abduction was claimed to be a true story that was public record, thus couldn't be trademarked. So he was...
Gotcha.
Yeah, he was in a weird spot where if Fuller wanted the money, he would have to claim that it was a hoax.
Okay. Gotcha. Interesting loophole there. Not loophole, but fact, I mean.
Guess 22. That's interesting. Exactly. Like, it's like, okay, if you want money off your story, well, sorry, if it's true, you can't. Such bullshit.
Well, it's to prevent people from being like, I trademark World War II. You can now not talk about it without paying me.
I mean, yeah. No, 100%. I do get that. But it's a little funny.
Yeah.
Could you imagine talking about World War II in school and just someone like busting in like FBI and they're
that's how I imagined it every time copyright I ever saw.
Striking in person.
Well, every time, like, whenever you play, like, a movie, like, a DVD or VHS tape, it was always that, like, big warning in the beginning. It was, like, FBI, like, recording and
selling piracy this. Is not a victimless crime. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you wouldn't
download a car.
I was sitting there. I'm like, oh, my God. If I tried to take a video of the TV screen, like, right now, like, the FBI are going to just, like, fly in the window and arrest
me. Paranoia.
It's pure paranoia, but that's what it felt like. So
it comes from being a paranormal researcher, let's be honest.
Yeah, paranoia is kind
of part of the territory. Or just being like a history teacher being like, okay, class, open your textbooks to the chapter on World War II, TM. Now, Betty Hill also threatened legal action due to feeling that the reenactment portrayed the abduction incorrectly. It appears she did not follow through on this, as no written record of any such case brought against PBS or Sagan exists.
She spoke to a lawyer and they were like, you will probably not win.
That's possible, but I don't like to make judgments on people I don't know.
Well, then there's just no fun in it.
Except for the wars. Who I have on multiple occasions called frauds on this very podcast. The other most outspoken skeptic of the Hills was surprisingly Dr. Simon, the very man who hosted their regression therapy. He believed that the experience was not a literal one so much as their brain's interpretation of subconscious fears and hopes. It's kind of like how dreams shouldn't be taken literally, but do often give hints as to what your subconscious is trying to tell you. In particular, he thought it was rooted in Barney's anxiety of being in an interracial marriage at a time when that was not widely socially acceptable. That possibly explains why the encounter was significantly less terrifying for Betty, who seemed the more optimistic of the pair. Barney, on the other hand, was a veteran of World War II, a victim of racial discrimination as a Black man in the Jim Crow era, and still having guilt from a previous failed marriage. To add on to the last point, he had sons from that marriage that he was no longer in contact with.
Dang.
Yeah.
I just feel bad for him. He's just had such a hard life.
I feel bad for him.
Well, and it's what I find it interesting that you said Dr. Simon
yes.
thinks that it, like it's all like subconscious trying to like interpret something else. So what does he think? Is this all supposedly a dream that they both experienced? Does he think it was an actual event, but they just misinterpreted it?
He thinks it was a shared psychosis that they had a dream and that Betty's dreams kind of influenced Barney's version of events. That it's kind of a shared delusion, if that makes
sense.
He's trying to like explain it away with like psychological reasoning and all that.
Yeah, which I get.
And shared delusions, I mean, that's definitely a thing, I think. I don't know if it's ever actually been a thing. But like the dancing,
it is,
the dancing disease or whatever that was, all those people who like dance to death, like that was what
oh
they
my
considered,
god, I
like,
forgot about that.
They considered that like a shared delusion. It was like almost like they just caught the delusion and then they couldn't get out of it.
Yeah, and there's been cases of like, there's one family in Australia that literally fled their house in the middle of the night, drove cross country by like ditching their phones and shit. And the parents, their paranoia just kept feeding into each other. It's the aliens. They're here. Now you can easily see how the encounter reflects Barney's fears. The black uniforms, the redheaded Irishman, the frankly less than friendly treatment. Yet many in the UFO field of study believe that aliens often take the form that is more comprehensible to those they present themselves to. Change themselves into a more understandable form, you know?
Did Betty share these like same characteristics in her explanations of like the aliens that she dealt with or that she saw that he did, or
It
was that just him?
varies. It seems to just be him. She didn't mention black uniforms. And again, they're relatively peaceful to her.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Betty, who already had an interest in UFOs, had a more friendly interaction with them. Simon also believed that the reason their accounts were so similar was because Betty told Barney about her dreams, thus allowing them to unintentionally influence each other's emotions, each other's memories. And that brings us to one of the theories as to what happened. And I do want to give a bit of a heads up. The next section is going to make light reference to sexual and racially motivated violence. You see, some believe that the abduction did happen, but wasn't by aliens. One of the theories is that the Hills were attacked on that road, beaten, and possibly had stuff done to them. And to cope, their brain simply imagined it as aliens. I disagree, however. Yes, Betty's dress was torn, but that wouldn't explain the pink substance, the shiny spots on their car, and if they're attacked by a racist mob, I feel like they would have more injuries, you know?
Yeah. It's more like I'm surprised they survived because, I mean, in that period, they were killing people. I mean, there was an entire city that they burnt down, like, because someone misidentified a black man as sexually assaulting a white woman. Like, I mean, proof of the matter is they killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
So,
and if people are willing to do this to them, I feel like they also wouldn't be the people to leave them completely physically unscathed.
Yeah, physically unscathed, alive.
Or
like,
alive.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah.
However, skepticism for the Hills' experience grew in 1990, however, as the satellite Hipparchus which measured the distance between stars with new heightened accuracy, disproved Marjorie's star map, that the distances she was going off of for her calculations were completely incorrect. So much so that she publicly disavowed her statement, admitting that she was proven wrong, which honestly, kudos for her for taking it on the chin. I respect the willingness to accept new information. A lot of people would double down.
True.
Sadly, Barney Hill died of a cerebral hemorrhage on February 25th, 1969. Now a widow, Betty continued to share their story and was a frequent speaker on the UFO circuit all the way up to her death in 2004.
Aw, wait. Wow. They had the alien experience in 61 and he died 8 years later?
Yes.
Did she live until 04?
Didn't seem so, because even when they spoke about it publicly, he never really took charge like Betty did. He always kind of let her take point on it. There's one interview where they asked him, do you believe it was aliens? And his only response is, you should ask Betty first.
Oh.
Yeah, he never really got over what happened.
Yeah, he's just trying to like disassociate from it or something.
Poor Fane. That's actually really sad. I feel really bad for him.
Yeah, that sucks.
It's kind of a running theme that if you have an alien encounter, your life goes immediately in the shitter.
I'd like to believe that the people in my life, like if something like that were to happen to me, that they wouldn't just discount me or make me feel crazy. Like I'd be able to talk about it without like feeling like I'm losing my mind and then die like 10 years later and just feel like my whole life is just in shambles. Like that's just, drives me crazy. Yeah. I feel so bad for so many people.
You can talk to us. I don't know if anyone's going to believe us. Let's be honest. The fact that we have a paranormal podcast means that if we ever actually encounter anything, no one's going to fucking believe us.
They're not going to believe us. I did see something the other night that I need to share with you, Harmon, because I think you'd get a kick out of it. So, okay.
Ooh.
We can continue with aliens.
All right, we're almost done. In 2007, Betty's niece, Kathleen Marden, along with Stanton T. Friedman, published a book titled Captured, The Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. And from it, I learned what might possibly be the most compelling physical evidence of this case, which is the pink substance on Betty's dress, which, as I mentioned earlier, was found to be organic, but of unknown origin.
How do you test like that kind of material and get it to come back with information and know that it's organic material that you can't identify? Like, does that mean anything special?
Basically, that's not a known chemical, a known substance. You could probably do stuff to see like what its pH level is, hardness, typical stuff like that. There's probably a bunch of chemistry stuff you can do that I don't know about, because my expertise begins and ends with things that don't exist. I'm a waste of a college degree.
Oh my god.
Graduating 2020, so I got a PowerPoint.
2021!
2020.
You guys leave me in the dust. Excuse me. I took my entire 4 years to graduate, guys.
I was done in 3 and I was happy about it. Harmon, did you graduate in winter or spring?
Winter.
That's what I thought. Okay, so you were
like one a semester
after me.
Okay. Oh, I'm gonna brag about it. I'm joking. Even after their passing, though, their story lives on and continues to fascinate, befuddle, and intrigue skeptics and believers alike. As I stated before, this case basically sets the template for what people can expect in abduction cases. Not all, but a lot of them follow this general pattern of missing time, medical examinations, and regression therapy. Since then, alien abductions have become a staple of the UFO mythos. According to a survey in 1993 hosted by author Bud Hopkins, Associate Professor of History at Temple University David Jacobs, and professor of sociology at Eastern Michigan University, Ron Westrum, with funding from the Roper Organization, an estimated 1.6% of Americans are believed to have likely been alien abductees with or without their knowledge. But If that is simply a product of cultural osmosis leading to shared delusions, or a hint that this pattern is based on a wider, darker phenomenon, is left to be debated. What do you all think so far?
1.6%. How? That's wild. So, like, how did they come up with that? Especially if that's what?
Oh, that's millions of people.
Yeah, that's still like a big number. Even though it's like a small percentage, it's still like a bunch of people. But I'm curious how they got the statistic for like people that unknowingly were abducted. Like, was it from like a regression therapy session kind of thing, or?
It was actually kind of clever. They designed the survey with 6 questions, and they didn't just come out and say, do you think you're abducted by aliens? They asked, did you experience missing time? Did you experience blocks in your memory, things like that? And the 6th question was actually a control question to see if people just had very suggestible personalities. The 6th right. question was, have you seen the word, I think it was Fabent, and known it has special purpose for you, special meaning to you? And if you answered that yes to that, they would say, okay, this person's just very susceptible to suggestion.
Okay, cool. They went about it in a smart way.
Yeah.
But see, I don't know if I agree with like the criteria of the survey questions they asked, because a lot of those questions they ask can be attributed to just trauma in general.
That's true.
Or
it's very vague.
Like, yeah.
Like something wrong with like your brain where your synapses don't connect and tell you stuff.
I technically have missing time because of my brain stuff, and I don't believe I was kidnapped by aliens. I'm pretty sure it was just my brain.
When did they do that survey, Harmon?
1993. I have the questions pulled up if you want me to read them.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's also what I'm thinking is, like, back then also still mental health obviously wasn't as good as like it is today, so there's all these things that we don't know, so it's like, oh, these things are just associated with people being abducted and nothing wrong with your brain, you were just abducted, you silly goose.
Now the question was, how often does this occurrence happen to you? And it was waking up paralyzed with a sense of a strange presence or something else in your room, 2 experience a period of time of an hour or more in which you were apparently lost, you could not remember why or where you had been, 3 feeling you were actually flying through the air although you didn't know how or why, 4 seeing unusual lights or balls of light in a room without knowing what was causing them or where they came from, 5 finding puzzling scars on your body and neither you nor anyone else remembering how you received them or where you got them, and 6 was the control question, hearing or seeing the word Trondance and knowing it had a secret meaning for you. And if I read this correctly, I might be wrong. To be considered a true possible abductee, you had to answer yes to all of them. Except
even
the
Trondance question? Okay. No, okay.
Everything
I was like, wait, I thought we just talked. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Done with a sample size of 5,947 American adults.
Wow.
I'm interested in the sleep paralysis question that it asked.
Yeah, I hate that. That's. Whenever I hear about sleep paralysis, I'm afraid to fall asleep again because I'm like, what if it happens?
I've dealt with like what I refer to as sleep paralysis because like I very much was awake, but my eyes were shut. Yeah, I could see everything in the room I was in, but I could not physically move at all. And I had a panic attack and it woke me up. Like my panic attack is what woke me up and got me out of it. And it was terrifying because I couldn't move. I was freaking out.
That's horrifying.
Well, it's happened to me twice, but... I feel like in this specific circumstance, maybe they're looking for like a specific kind of like a descriptor in regards to like the sleep paralysis thing. Cause I get their point. Like if you're kidnapped, brought to an alien ship and you wake up and you can't move and there's things around you. Like, I mean, that's how alien abductions are explained a lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to feel something else in the room.
Yeah. Which could be the Hat Man from taking too much Benadryl.
We're going to do the Hat Man at some point.
Oh my goodness. I don't know what the Hat Man is.
You don't know what the Hat Man is?
I don't.
Oh my god.
I'm intrigued though.
It's weird having, like, no offense, Amber, such a fresh perspective on iconic parts of the paranormal. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah, no, it does. It's not offensive at all to me.
You're like a little baby. We get to
shut up.
Impression. You're impressionable. We're going to make you a believer by the end.
I'm already the youngest one, so don't call me a baby.
Small little Amber.
Yeah, my small bean.
But before we go any further, I'd like to share a word from our sponsor, Appalachian Oddities. Do you like the strange and mysterious, the odd and out of place? And I know just the place for you, Appalachian Oddities in Weston, West Virginia. Visit their film room to buy earrings based on your favorite horror movies. The library offers an assortment of books on topics ranging from ghosts, specters, to New Age mysticism, to even cryptids and other creatures. You can even get unique art crafted by local artisans, like the creepy H.R. Giger-inspired sculpture that I'm pretty sure whispers in my ear when no one else is around, or even some rather steamy cryptid-themed pinup paintings. Hubba hubba. My personal favorite are the enamel pins made in the likeness of some beloved beasties such as the Grafton Monster, the Flatwoods Phantom, and of course, fan favorite Mothman. And if you're in the neighborhood, you can attend a special event on December 9th, Murder at the Masquerade. During a secret society's annual masquerade, their leader is killed, and the remaining members must navigate a web of magic, misdirection, and murder as they search for the truth. In between looking for clues, you can enter our coffin raffle, compete in our best mask contest, or even enjoy some novelty mocktails. The show is one night only, so secure tickets now at AppalachianOddiesWV.com. Thank you again to Appalachian Oddities for sponsoring, and let's get back to the show. Now, when it comes to pulp culture, the biggest reference I can personally think of is episode 20, season 3. Of the X-Files, personal favorite episode of mine, titled Jose Chung's from Outer Space.
Oh my god.
It is not a cryptid code episode without at least one... Fuck, I already just forgot what you said. X-Files reference. Are you kidding me? I heard something in my brain.
I was waiting for you to get there.
Oh, distraction. Oh, no.
Is the man in black microwaving your brain?
I know, right now. I'm being scanned. Okay, that's what's happening. They're scanning me right now, so my brain gets jumbled.
I mean, not to be insensitive, but you have said multiple times on this podcast, quote, my brain is out my skull.
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
And it follows an author named Jose Chung's frustrating attempts to make sense of a nonsensical incident involving an abduction much like The Hills, where a couple was taken out of their car, burned onto a spaceship, and had samples taken. It's actually a really funny episode that I recommend.
Okay.
But with all that said and done, we are left with one final question. What, if anything, happened on the lonely rural roads of Vermont? Was it alien? A dream? Something more? Tell me, do you believe? Who wants to answer first?
Amber!
Yeah, okay, it's true. You're a guest.
Got voluntold today. I don't know. It is interesting to me when I hear these stories, though, because I'm like... especially if it's like happening to a couple, like, and obviously they had very different experiences with it, and one didn't want to talk about it, the other did. So that makes me more inclined to believe that this happened to them, because if they were trying to make money or something, they'd both be like, oh my god, yeah, this happened, and this happened, and I saw this, and I saw this. And I don't think it's like a... I can't even remember the word now. The delusion that they both had, like a delusion.
Shared psychosis.
Shared psychosis, shared delusion kind of thing. I don't know. I just don't see it being that, honestly. And obviously they both had two different tales, so there's that. So like I said, I'm more of like the skeptical person. But this one was intriguing. This one, it makes me want to believe more likely than not that a little something went on in Vermont back in old 1961.
Oh, this is great. This is good. We just talked about X-Files and you just said, I want to believe. Fuck yeah. I am Fox Mulder. Oh no, we're running out of time.
Oh no. I agree with Amber, I think. Only my reasoning, too, in regards to like the money-making aspect, I feel like if the whole goal was to make money off of it, they would have come forward a lot sooner.
Yes, that too.
And the fact that they didn't is why I am more likely to believe them, because, you know, they try to deal with it on their own. They try to talk themselves out of it. They try to, like, function. And then when it got to the point where they were like, okay, literally, whatever happened to us messed us up. We have to talk to somebody. And then they finally did. I mean, you kind of have to believe that. Like,
are you all ready? It doesn't feel.
Oh, my God. No.
No.
I think the regression therapy is dubious. Everything mentioned in the regression therapy to me is questionable, but everything before that, I believe, because we have the shiny spots, we have the pink substance, we have a torn dress, something happened out there. Now, what happened in the missing time? No clue, but something happened.
I'm curious though, like, so did they, like, write down, like, what they saw or anything before, like, say that out loud before their regression therapy of, like, their experience? Or was it only the regression therapy where the specifics came out?
Betty wrote down her dreams.
And that was about it, okay.
Yeah, about 10 days after the incident.
Okay.
Did she draw that map in her sessions with that guy? Or was that before?
Yes. That was in her regression thing, yeah.
So that can be... If we're going based on that the regression therapy could technically be kind of discounted, we kind of discount that as well.
Which Carl Sagan did, too.
I believe they were abducted. It's just details can't be taken as gospel. So, like, maybe they didn't look human. Yeah. Maybe they did do medical examinations, but it could have been a completely different vibe. Like, it could have been the grays. Could have been fucking lizard people.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like, his wife was already interested in UFOs and then has some kind of experience, can't remember it, in regression therapy. For her, she had positive emotions. For him, he had no experience. He was a skeptic. He had some trauma. He goes through this experience and he comes out of it feeling awful. And I think both those feelings that they're finding and discovering, like, in their regression therapy is really just the emotions they might have been feeling when whatever was happening was happening. And then in regression therapy, their subconscious is just creating images that make sense to them. So I definitely agree that regression therapy could probably be thrown out the window a little bit there, just because I don't know if it really works in these kinds of situations like that.
Yeah, I do believe they saw a flying saucer and were taken. Whatever they saw on the ship, I can't give my 100% approval on. But I do believe. Yeah,
that's fair. Question, do we have... It would be non-harming to not believe. Do we have her, like, dreams written down somewhere?
I could find them and I couldn't. I might be...
That's what I'm wondering. It's like, if they, like, kept them anywhere. Like, you know, it's like, it was her dreams... From, like, 61 after it happened. Who knows how long she wrote them down for and if family kept them after she passed or anything? Like,
I can try find them. You can find recordings of their regression therapy on YouTube.
Oh, no way.
It's creepy. I'll drop it on the Twitter, because I'm still calling it Twitter. Go fuck yourself. I know they have a bunch... The University of New Hampshire has a bunch of firsthand stuff on it, but I'd have to send, like, a long request to get it.
Okay. I mean, honestly, I still call it Twitter, too, just going back to that. Something interesting, too, that I want to bring up was when I was at... This was my freshman year, I want to say, maybe my sophomore year. I had to take a sociology class for... whichever thing I had to fulfill, and my professor was named Dr. White. I think he's still there, and he does sociology, like, specifically, and that's it. And he was talking about above
Before that parking lot and everything was like back there in like the science building and stuff. So Kenzie, you probably don't really know this, but Harmon, you kind of know the buildings back there and everything. So Hall used to be like the last building back there before like the one dorm and the science and engineering buildings. And he got out of a play one night and they were walking in the parking lot right behind, and he swears he saw a UFO just right above him in the parking lot. And that's really all he saw. He didn't see like anything in it or anything, but it was like hovering above the cars, like not super close, but like maybe like 15 plus feet. I don't know. But he seemed kind of psycho. So I'm like, I don't know if I believe you, dude.
I mean, the NASA stuff is right there.
That's true. I don't know if it's been there that long, though, because he said this was like way back in the day. So I don't know.
I'm going to blank out the name of our college because I'm very paranoid about that. So it's going to be, see how long it's been. Boo State. I thought you were going to say, oh, yeah, this happened to me in college. I was abducted by aliens.
No, you would have known way sooner.
Thank you. But, we have 3.5 minutes left. Amber, how'd you enjoy your first dip into the Fortium?
I loved it. I had lots of fun learning new stuff.
Yay! Yeah.
Hopefully
that means we're gonna, I was about to say, that means we're gonna drag you back.
Please do. Multiple times. I would enjoy it. Lady's face right now.
Kenzie's just getting progressively lower throughout this episode.
I know, she's just going flat.
I'm just laying. I started sitting up. Rises.
Kenzie, there is, if you ever come back out this way, Harmon and I need to make a date to do this soon. There is a cryptid themed mini golf in Morgantown now. It's super cute. I'll have to text you pictures too, because I sent some pictures to Harmon and there's some really cool ones. So I can't remember all the ones you guys have touched on, but I know obviously you guys have talked about Mothman on here.
Cheap Squatch.
There's a Grafton monster.
I haven't done that one yet.
Okay. There was a couple others. There's like a Weeping Woman one. Some kind of minor one. Not minors in like minority or like minor child, like
coal miner. 49er. That's the only thing I ever think
about.
Yes,
minor 49er. Love him.
I think that's there the Tommy Knocker.
There was a Scooby Doo episode on the minor 49er.
And he was in the first movie.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
The live action one. Do you remember?
I thought he was in the second one when the monsters come to life.
Oh, wait, no, that's right. The second one. You're right. You're right.
Boo. Ooh. I hate live action Scooby Doo. Boo.
Brady does too, man. But it's so nostalgic for me.
All right. We have a minute and a half left. Few things. One, we went to Cryptid Bash. I'll be attending the Mothman Festival. So if you are attending, please come out and say hi. I'll be the dipshit in the denim jacket with a bunch of cryptid pins.
I thought you said I'll be at the dipshit. I was like, what is that?
No, I am the dipshit.
Harmon, let me show you the thing I got you. I got this at the cryptid mini golf thing for Harmon, Kenzie.
Oh.
This.
Aww.
So you stick it on the thing and it makes a little shadow of Mothman.
I love that.
So cool.
You should put a candle in it. It was $10.
Less than a minute left. I'm sorry to do this, Amber. Follow us at The Cryptic Code on X or Twitter or whatever you like to call it. Follow us on YouTube and join us whenever the fuck we do this again. We are The Cryptic Code. Always drive faster than UFOs. Never tell your husband your dreams. And most of all, stay spooky out there. Good night.
Bye.